It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to Access of Easy. This is number 360. My name is Joey. That's Len. It's Thursday night. How you doing, buddy? What's going on? What's the good word?
What can I say, Joey? It's a good day. Beautiful outside. Didn't rain. I could do the laundry, which was really good, as I mentioned earlier. So, yeah, it's a wonderful day. Maybe we'll get some NHL 94 in later. How's it going over there?
I'm feeling unburdened by what has been, Len. Things are good over here.
Well, you remember,
no longer burdening me.
Today is yesterday's tomorrow, and tomorrow is going to be today's tomorrow. But now is now. We're living it, but relish it because we don't know when the next time we're going to be in now. Tomorrow is going to be today. It's going to be just a mess.
When is the debate between Kamala, whatever she's going by today? When is the next debate? This is September, right? September 17th, I think I saw on Fox.
Well, there's no guarantee because she's not yet the nominee, right? They still have to go through that process.
I guess she can still
get rugged. Yeah. And somebody else is going to come
in. Obama doesn't like her, right? He has not publicly endorsed her yet. So the true leader of the Democratic Party for the last, you know, what is it at this point? 16 years, I guess. Has yet to throw his weight behind her. Yeah, who cares?
Kinda.
Yeah.
It was a lukewarm.
Yeah.
I think
a lot of people are lukewarm on her. Anyway, doesn't matter. We'll talk to start another show to talk about Kamala.
That's gonna be a short-lived show because I don't think her political career is gonna be very long. But you know what? With all due respect, you know, we can make fun all you want, you can say what you want. She became the vice president. I don't care how she became the vice president.
Oh, I'm sure.
But that's a title that's going to be associated with her for the rest of her life. Just like
it'll be on her tombstone. You know, that's a first paragraph obituary type title, right?
Do you get also buried in, I forget the name of that cemetery.
Arlington or whatever?
Yes. Is it only for presidents or is it vice president? I don't know.
Good question.
That's why, like, you can say what you want about Joe as well, Joe Biden. He's one of just, you know, a few dozen that has ever achieved that. And he can take that. That's a legacy, you know. Unfortunately, in this case, it's not the greatest of legacies. But, you know, something, you know, a lot of people, most people have never been able to even consider.
You and me are not going to we're not going to make it to that tower, right? I don't think so.
Well, we can't. I don't think we can just eligible. You have to be born in the United States, right? Is that the
not
way
with
it
that
is?
Attitude? That's for sure.
Oh, clearly, yeah. I'm a fucking born loser, so I'm going to settle for second best, which is just voting.
Okay,
I'll vote harder though. Let me tell you.
Last week's quote: socialism of any type and shade leads to a total destruction of the human spirit and to a leveling of mankind into death. That was from Alexander Solzhenitsyn.
Solzhenitsyn. That's the way I will pronounce it.
Mike got it. So I don't know if Mike spelled it correctly, but God bless you, Mike. Way to go. This week's quote: don't worry about people stealing your ideas. If your ideas are any good, you'll have to ram them down people's throats. That's actually that really speaks to me, that one. If you know who that was by, then put it in the comments. You guys know the drill. No Googling, no searching. Don't pervert the process.
And more than anything, I hope that it's not a difficult name to pronounce. I want just, you know, please, a Mike Smith, please, or something like that.
Yeah.
Right? Let's come on. Let's bring it down a couple.
We can do better. Like, there's a lot of people with single names, right? Like, if that was from Cher or something, that would
be
easier.
Yeah, it could be Madonna.
Yeah. Madonna.
Yeah.
Lone 21st century philosopher Madonna. If you know, put it in there. Renewals on Mark and the team if you get it right, and you're first to get it right, as usual. So, Len, busy week in data breaching and overreaching from what I see here. And obviously had the CrowdStrike thing last week. We've got a number of stories here, some repeat offenders. This is becoming quickly sort of the Google and Microsoft hour, but we have some other contributors tonight as well. Yeah. Where do you want to start?
SSH. Well, let's talk about this truly messed up story. I had to do a double take on this one. I very, very strange because it's the cybersecurity firm known as KnowBefore. I'm not going to even rank that name because it's not associated.
You do want to know before. I just don't think it's a very good name for
And the way they put the four in.
Yeah.
Instead of the number four, not F-O-R-E. I look at that. It's like, oh, man, that's like a 90s type thing. Anyways, they needed to fill a position. Right. And they did what every other company would want to do. They posted the job. They received resumes. They went through them to find the right candidate. They did interviews. Did background checks, verified those.
The blog KnowBefore is where the story is. It's not reporting on another firm. KnowBefore is the affected firm in this story.
Yes.
Yes.
And it messed up on so many levels, by the way, too. So anyways, this position they ultimately filled, which good for them. But, you know, they decided, okay, this person's going to be offsite. They sent a person a computer and it was a Mac workstation, no less. But upon arrival, they noticed that malware was loaded up and once the employee started to use it. And it wasn't because of a faulty installation of the software. No, it was the user itself was the problem, or users. So looks like the attacker, they performed various actions to manipulate session history files. They did transfer potentially harmful files. They executed unauthorized software. And they also used a Raspberry Pi to download the malware. Like, this is a very complex thing, but it turned out this whole job, this dude or dudette or whoever was behind it, it's all a fraud. This worker was a fraud because the workstation they sent was to what they call an IT mule laptop farm. Never heard of that term before. And over there, they used a VPN where they to log in from where they are physically located. So looks like this person may have been even associated with North Korea or China or whatever. But either way, they did some investigating. The identification that this guy provided for his job, it looks like it may have been stolen from a US-based identity. The picture was AI enhanced as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so this scam was out there. The guy was getting paid apparently pretty well. And so it looks like this is messed up. Like, it's like a fake person applying for a job with probably fake resumes, fake everything, fake picture. Got the job and they sent him a computer. Like, this is just messed up. Like, think about KnowBefore. How owned are you?
How'd they check the references on this fake guy? Like, this is the question. I think they're putting this up here. Like, you know, we sent all this stuff out but look, we ended up catching it. But like you mentioned there at the beginning of the article, there's a bit of a TLDR. You should read the whole thing if you haven't, but performed background checks, verified references, and hired the person. What person?
It's something. Could be
what
them.
What are we talking about here?
And I'm not talking like, to them. That's, you know, with them and I don't know, whatever. Well, I don't know. It's messed up. And you know what? They go through the process and they just willy-nilly sent this guy a Mac workstation, yeah. Right? Like, yeah. I don't know how much those cost. I guess a few $2,000,
$3,000, yeah, probably.
But you know what? In terms of like the job itself was probably very high paying. If you're sending somebody, you know, saying you're going to work remotely, we're going to send you a Mac. You know, I would imagine it's going to be a six-figure type salary.
Yeah,
right. I don't think this guy's working for or the job was for minimum.
Did you see the best part is what like recommended process improvement and what to look out for. The what to look out for list is hilarious. Okay, one of these things is not like the others. Use VoIP numbers. This is what to look out for. Use of VoIP numbers and lack of digital footprint. Discrepancies in address and birth date. Conflicting personal information like marital status or family emergencies explaining unavailability. Sophisticated use of VPNs. Or maybe, Len, the last one here. Attempt to execute malware and subsequent cover-up efforts. Do you think? What would you be more concerned with? Oh, I got a family emergency today. I can't make it in. Or that the guy is running a million malicious scripts.
The data burst that just don't matter. There's so many red flags here. Well, I like the AI picture that they showed. That's great too.
Yeah, that's
like,
good.
Oh my gosh. This whole thing is just messed up from
so the left, head. The photo on the left is the original stock picture. And then on the right is the AI enhanced one. It just makes the guy look Chinese or Asian.
Like something like that. Yeah.
Like what is the, I mean, I guess.
I don't know.
Are you more likely to get an IT job like this if you're from the East?
You know what? IT jobs seem
I thought
more...
the E in DEI stood for equity, not Eastern descent.
But it's inclusive too.
Ah, interesting.
Everybody's allowed on board, but messed up. Anyways, that's all I got to say about that story. I could say that if you are hiring, do a little bit more research, be more diligent in the whole process, or else you might get some Chinese or North Korean actor that's just VPNing it and taking the money and God knows what they're doing with it.
I love
malware.
It. I love it. And I have nothing else to add. I said my piece. I think it's a great. That might be one of the funniest stories we've done on this show. That's a banger.
It was a two-taker for me when I read it. When it's like that, you know it's going to be. Anyways, USPS. They've been sharing information and not very good, it looks like, because there was a recent investigation done by TechCrunch, and they uncovered what is seemed to be a huge privacy breach involving the United States Postal Service, USPS. And it was discovered that USPS was sharing the postal addresses of their online customers with major tech companies. And these include Meta, LinkedIn, and Snap. So the method by which USPS used to collect and share this information was through the use of tracking pixels. That's where tiny pieces of code is embedded within a website. And these pixels can collect various data points, including a user's behavior, and in this case, the postal addresses. So the USPS website contains these pixel tracking pixels on their website. And these capture the address of the people that logged in. And, well, they take this information and they passed it on, man. Like, they're selling it. Like, this is pretty damning stuff. When you know somebody's name, you know somebody's address, that's potential harm that can be inflicted on somebody if that information lands in the wrong hands. USPS is owned by the U.S. federal government. Am I correct on that?
No, I think it is. Yeah.
So why would they do this? Are they just that hard up for money? The United States government should look into this and get to the bottom of this. What is it? But even then, the U.S. government is probably collecting data on everybody as well. So this is just par for the course.
So this is an independent agency of the executive branch of the U.S. government. I would imagine this is similar to Canada Post, honestly, like an independent, quote unquote, arm's length organization. There's no safe way to browse on these websites. You know, USPS is not really a website where you'd be browsing, but the thing to take away from this is that, you know, there's all these laws about like tracking cookies and stuff like that, and iPhones and other devices try and make things private. But no, almost no matter what you do now, unless you have a phone that's like graphene like yours, or one of these like really high-end privacy focused phones, you're going to run into this problem over and over again. The question remains, it's really a two-pronged question, right, for the average user. One, what are you doing to prevent your data from being shared, right? That's a big one. And number two, are you using services that have already proven that they will share your data and then only apologize when they get caught? And so the answer to one of those questions is almost invariably going to go against you, right? Either you're not taking care to protect your data, you're using the same passwords, you're using, you know, open browsers, you're on Chrome, you're on Edge, you're on whatever, using machines that have like, you know, information about you that makes it valuable to advertisers, whatever the case is. You know, even if you do everything right, Len, you're still up against the monolith here. All these companies are trying to get this data, and the price is so high that the companies who have the data are unwilling to lock it up for you. And don't forget too, like a service like USPS, think about all the information they have about you. They know who you're ordering from. They know, you know, presumably, maybe not exactly, but close to what you're buying, thanks to like harmonized tax codes and whatnot. Like, it's very easy to get that information and do really, really targeted advertising with it. And again, you know, they're not gonna stop sharing it. You know, your postal address and stuff like that. Like, I think that's really the tip of the iceberg. I bet you if there was a bit more of a deep dive on what exactly the USPS is sharing with these big companies, it would be significantly more. And I think the other thing to keep in mind, Len, how many U.S. representatives, you know, Congress or Senate, are railing against big tech companies every single day on Twitter and in the halls of Washington, all, like, you know, half of them, all the Democrats basically at this point, or all the Republicans, depending on, you know, whether we're in election season or not, they're all railing against big tech. And then you got an arm of the government here, more or less selling them data. How's that? You know, robbing from Peter to pay Paul a little bit. Sucks. The consumer loses over and over and over again. And another example here.
Another way we're losing out is we're not getting all these domain names that we want to snap up, because there's a cyber criminal gang called Revolver Rabbit.
Yeah, 5 out of 5. This is 5 out of 5 for me. Yep. It's
good. Man.
Random number generator just really hit good there. Tickled my brain. I was going to give it a 1.
This reminded me a lot of Roger Rabbit for whatever reason. That's why I just
what could the reason be?
I don't know. Revolver Rabbit. Just like I'm looking at
Anyway. Oh man.
Yeah. Well, Revolver Rabbit, they're responsible for registering hundreds of thousands of domain names for malware campaigns. This is according to a recent report. These goons rely on registered domain generation algorithms. Those are RDGAs. That's an automated method that allows registering multiple domain names in an instant. So unlike DGAs, which are embedded in malware strains and only register some of the generated domains, RDGAs, well, these guys, they could generate thousands and thousands and register them. In this case, more than 700,000 domains over time they've registered. This gang spent over $1 million on domain registrations alone for their operations. So this is making it difficult for researchers to discover and find out the pattern and what they're trying to do here, because obviously they're going to be using this for malware. But man, you know, this sucks, because we're all trying to find the right domain name out there as a way to squat in it and maybe make some bank and pad a retirement. These guys are making it harder for us to do that, because they're going out there and just registering everything that's available. And what the heck?
Right, were you hoping to retire on the back of bra portable air conditioner 90.bond? Mm-hmm. Was that on your list?
Do you think that could make money or no? Like, I don't care. How much is it to squat? I don't know. Like, just, you know,
I think CanadianBitcoiners.com costs us like $50 a year, something like that. Yeah,
he's gonna spend $1 million.
So you can imagine the number of URLs. I don't know
if US dollars, by the way.
I don't know if Bleeping Computer and InfoBlocks are just cherry picking some of the URLs. But think back to the targets of some of the attacks we've seen. People who are kind of desperate, maybe tech illiterate, looking for shortcuts, looking for help. Here's some of them: USA Online degree, portable air conditioner, UK river cruises, AI courses, app software development training, assisted living, online jobs, perfumes, security surveillance cameras, and yoga classes. That's a, you know, I don't know if it's like narrowly targeted, but I think that's hitting a lot of the populations that are more susceptible to scams than others. You know, you're hardly ever going to have stuff in there like, I don't know, Microsoft Excel training.bond, you know. That person may not be quite as susceptible to a scam as the person who visits onlinejobs.bond or aicourses.bond, you know? So I think it's an interesting selection there that the publisher here, Bleeping Computer, has chosen to use, or InfoBlocks, like I said. But the crime, ultimately, I'm surprised, is really just the use of the URLs. It's somehow not illegal to run these like monster loader operations where you buy presumably hundreds of thousands of these things, right? Isn't that weird? Should there be a law against that? I don't know. It's almost like botting PS5s, you know, except more nefarious.
Is there laws against botting stuff like PS5s?
I have no idea. Should there be? I don't know. I don't know what the rationale would be, but.
Well, I think we should squat on the website isurvivedthecrowdstrikeoutage.com. Right? Sure.
Mark's probably already got it.
Anyways, there's a lot of Microsoft users out there that were shut out from their computers as a result of some faulty code from CrowdStrike. And this was an update that was pushed out, and it was done last week on Thursday evening Eastern time, and then it transpired into the early hours of Friday morning. So people that went to work on Friday morning, they noticed there was a significant outage, and it disrupted a lot of organizations worldwide. Finance, healthcare, transportation, government, you name it. If it was a big company, a big organization, a big business, they probably could have been impacted by this. But either way, as I mentioned, the root of this was triggered by faulty software update. And that's from CrowdStrike's Falcon sensor. And it's a critical component of its endpoint protection platform. And it's there was a critical error when processing the update. It led to systems crashing and disrupting a lot of operations. CrowdStrike, to their credit, they deployed a fix rather quick to prevent any further crashes, but restoring systems to full functionality still took some time and effort. Now, there's been some questioning as per the timing of this. It was shortly after there was an assassination attempt. And if, you know, one could maybe draw a conclusion here that this is probably trying to cause widespread disruption. So it could have been on a timer. Who the heck knows? Either way, CrowdStrike, if you take a look at their stock price, in the past month alone, it's been down around a third. So they've been hammered quite a bit. Not all that much in the past week. I think it was down 10% considering all the damage it has caused. Either way, people that have shorted this, good for you. I want to see the Pelosi tracker to see if she shorted it. Maybe she got some inside information. This impacted only specific Windows users. If you were a home user, you probably weren't impacted at all. But either way, it sucked nonetheless.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the tinfoil hat stuff. I think it's an important note to the story, even if I'm not particularly inclined to believe it. I did see that some IT professionals on Twitter were using this to make the case that in an enterprise setting, almost nobody should be leaving their computer on overnight. I don't know if that means that the computer wouldn't have updated or that the update they eventually got in the morning would have been the one with the patch on it. But they're basically saying, like, look, this has the potential to be much more damaging. And we're seeing now little compatibility issues with Windows updates sometimes, or application issues, application compatibility issues with Windows update. To me, the isn't the bigger problem here that all these systems are running on the same, you know, cocktail of software? Isn't that the really big issue?
So it's the easiest, you know, you're just dealing with one particularly.
It's like a central point of failure now, yeah. Right? And so you kind of have these, and I know Microsoft is, you know, quote unquote reliable. I'm not convinced of that. You know, it's hard to say what to do about something like this, because, you know, Mark has said to me in the past, I think you said on CBP, we're talking about this term technical deficit. And it's the first thing I thought of when I saw this story, that it's just so hard to build something that works better because you need redundancies and can't take these systems offline. Like, you can't take airlines offline for a day or 2 days to like put in a new set of software, right? Everything's got to run on top of the other thing so that the other thing can keep working while there's an update. Or if there's a problem, you can go back to the other thing, blah, blah, blah. The issue is that you get all these different, you know, relationships, I would say, maybe there's a better word for it, codependencies, I don't know, between different lines of code and different parts of the software. And when one thing doesn't work, you're toast, man. And it's across all these different silos. So like I said, you know, even if you don't care if the airlines go down, it turns out that your, you know, water system uses the same technology, or your mechanic uses the same software, or whatever, right? A worldwide outage, Len, seems to me almost like the thing that we should be most concerned about in modern society, you know? Because, you know, what is that old saying? You're only like 9 missed meals away from complete pandemonium. So you start to get into this, you know, 9 missed meals territory with a software issue or like a hardware compatibility issue. I don't know. And then what? You wish you'd had Linux on a couple of your machines, right? Or you wish you had Mac on a couple of your machines. I don't know. I don't know what to say besides that. It's a little scary. You know, it's funny. You and I can laugh at it. And, you know, we had some friends who were laughing at it. And I know Mark doesn't have any of the EasyDNS stuff, you know, affected by this kind of nonsense. So there's companies who get it right before it's too late, right? They understand the risks and they take action, even though it might be difficult. But a lot of companies just don't, because, you know, for the same reason they don't put Bitcoin on the treasury, the career risk and telling everyone they should make a change from the status quo is too great. They'd rather just coast and hope nothing goes wrong before they retire. And this is what the, you know, this is what you get. This is the product of that kind of thinking.
And if things go wrong, you get a buyout and you're still okay for some time. Yeah, right? Exactly. It's a win.
Sell your stock. Everyone's mad on Twitter. Didn't the CFO of this company or the CSO of CrowdStrike sell some stock the week before this? I think he might have. I was looking for that earlier, but I couldn't remember which C-suite person it was. Could have been a scheduled sale. C-suite have to schedule their sales in advance in a lot of cases. So it could have been that simple, but the timing, always the timing, lends something to the timing, you know?
Is it somebody that applied for a job over there and they sent them their MacBook and they sort of updated the software remotely? And that's what screwed everything up.
Yeah, that was it.
I'd like to know if there's a connection here between
that. We got to find out. People talking about the assassination attempt, they should be talking about AI job applicants.
Yeah. And you were saying leaving computers, well, it's recommended, you're saying to not leave them on overnight.
Yeah.
Which is funny because that's the exact opposite of what we've been told for a long time.
I know.
Starting up of a computer gives it the most wear and tear. So leaving it on tends to increase the longevity of
is that equipment. True now that all the drives are basically solid state, like there's not really any moving parts except for like the fan and the graphics card. Oh yeah, true. Okay.
And the power supply, so there's going to be some things that are going to suffer as a result of turning it off and on, but there's also like maybe going into a sleep mode, maybe it's not as bad. I don't know, this is beyond my pay grade.
I'm not sure.
Who the heck knows? But either way, did you hear about that? Was it Southwest Airlines? They were running Windows 3.1.
yeah, so they were unaffected. Yeah. How great is that?
I don't know if that's true or not. Apparently that may have been debunked, but the fact that it was being thrown out there that they're running some like 40 something year old software. And
I think it might even be older than that now, right? That's gotta be early 80s. So I guess maybe 40.
No, not early 80s. It's early 90s, maybe late 80s.
3.1 is one where you turn it on and there's like two sort of squares in the middle of the screen, like a menu and a settings. Is it that one? I feel like that was the first Windows I ever saw on a home computer.
Or 3.1 with workgroups, or 3.11 workgroups. That was the one that we seem to use.
Windows 3.1 interface.
3.11, I don't know. It seems to be more common to me. But
This is old. Holy smokes, man.
Yeah, it had Minesweeper on it. It was
a lot of fun. Yeah. I mean, I think these computers still have Minesweeper.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure. If I go to my thing, yeah, I have Minesweeper here. The graphics are a lot nicer, but
they should do a retro version of that.
Well, their versions are okay. Read the next story.
Google, they dropped the ball, looks like, because cookies, we were talking about that. At least we just touched on it earlier. Mm-hmm. Cookies in Chrome and the Chrome browser, it's one of the most widely used browsers, if not the most widely used browser. I think they got like 60% of the market share globally. Either ways, cookies have been used for a long time. It's not just a Chrome thing. It's been in the web world for a long time. And it's used by, it's a tool that's used by online advertising industry. And these are small packets of data that store user information and preferences. And what this does, it allows for advertisers to track user behavior across different websites. And by doing that, it could deliver targeted ads. But it's obvious that this is a concern about the end user's privacy, is third-party cookies can create a detailed profile of a user's browsing habits. So Google, they decided to take some steps to try to handle this moving forward. Initially, they planned to phase out third-party cookies entirely, but it seems that phasing out this is way more complicated than anticipated. Plus, there's concerns that were raised about the potential impact on the online advertising industry. And, you know, those are the people that bread Google's butter. And Google, they rely heavily on the industry, relies heavily on these cookies for targeted advertising. But there were technical challenges that, you know, they try to develop alternate solutions that could give a balance between users' privacy and a way to make these advertisers happy. So they abandoned this altogether, the eliminating of the third-party cookies. So now they spawned this new privacy sandbox, and it's a development within its privacy sandbox initiative. This may provide the answer for everybody. And the initiative aims to create a more privacy-focused ecosystem for online advertising. And the sandbox proposes alternative measures for ad targeting that do not rely on individual user tracking. And they say these methods can involve techniques like contextual targeting, and it could also contain the content or look at the contents of the website to determine what ad is displayed. So still there's going to be some information that's going to be shared. Google, I can see they do not want to piss off the advertisers, because the majority of the revenue in which they get, which is billions, comes from single source, which is advertisement. If they lose that, the company goes tits up. For such a very large company, all the eggs are in one basket. So they are not going to do anything to piss people off. If they have to have people's privacy compromised even a little bit moving forward as a result of them continually their connection, their relationship with advertisers, so be it. That's what got them to this point, and that's what's probably going to carry them moving forward. It sucks, but what I would suggest, and I hope people have already done this, is ditch Chrome. Find a better browser. There are tons out there that are privacy focused. Chrome is not one of them.
You don't even need, if you just want to improve from Chrome, any other browser is better for privacy. Literally any other one. Especially on mobile. Safari is more private by default, and you can actually tweak Safari to be significantly more private. This article is speculating this is a direct response to a rather clever Apple ad that draws on that movie, The Birds. I'm pretty sure it's called The Birds or Birds. And, you know, I think Google, there's a general, I think, increase in awareness by the average person, even in the normie ranks, about how much they're being spied on by the devices they use. Everyone is talking about how their phone is listening. You know, they're joking about it, but they know it's true. They're recording keystrokes, recording locations, doing all this stuff. And to me, Google, like, talk about whether or not this is a good faith move, Len. Isn't it telling enough that the default is that you have to opt in to any extra privacy features in Chrome instead of it being private by default, even though they know that this is the most widely used browser and that almost all these people will never venture into the settings. They'll just use it willy-nilly. Like, they know this. And so they say, I guarantee if I downloaded Chrome right now, the first launch, it wouldn't tell me, oh, by the way, if you want to be more private, here's where you go. Of course, it doesn't say that. They just hang you out to dry. They don't worry about whether or not you turn it more private. They don't want you to, because as you mentioned, these guys are making billions of dollars on ads, and the ads need to be sharp for them to sell. And if they're not targeted well, then, well, guess what? No one clicks through. And so, like, to me, it's clearly not even a good faith move. You got to get off Chrome if you're still on it. I doubt people who listen to this show and read the newsletter are still on it. But man, if you are, or you know somebody who is, you know, you could show them this article. This is digestible for the layman. It's clear it's not a good faith move, and it's another story. It's another week, another story about Google or YouTube or, you know, whatever, one of their subsidiaries or tools or applications with a eye on you that they should not have, looking into data that is not, you know, or should not be theirs to share and sell. But it never ends with these guys, man. They're in every facet of your life at this point. And if you don't just get off of these services, it's only going to get worse. It's only going to get worse. Did you see, it's not in this newsletter, but talk about, like, the normie not understanding privacy. Amazon is going to start charging $10 a month for advanced Alexa AI features. So presumably you'll be giving it more complex commands and getting back better results. To me, that's just tighter targeting. And not only are they going to sell that, you're going to pay them to give them the information. Is that nuts or what? Like, the average person just does not understand what they're giving up. And by the time they realize it, it's too late. They wind up in another Access of Easy story about passwords lost, information harvested, whatever, right? Never ending cycle, man. Never ending cycle.
They're the product. And not only that, the information that's being, as you mentioned, harvested by these, like, Amazon Alexas or whatever.
Yeah.
They can, and they have been used in court of law.
By the police? I know. Isn't that nuts or what? Like, geez. Right? Like,
you know, you could make a joke And, you know, you're totally, but it could be misconstrued in a different way and then use that against you. And you're just simply making a joke about something. And man, like you can't even speak in your own house if you have one of these things. And you got to be very careful about everything.
You got to stay away from the stuff, man. Way the hell away from it.
Mm-hmm. So OpenSSH, and there's a vulnerability with that. And I'm going to just list off the ones that are affected. Then I'm going to get into what the vulnerability is. So if people out there that have OpenSSH and running it, so if you have version 4.4p1 or earlier, there is patches to fix it. Versions 4.4p1 to 8.4p1, it's not vulnerable because it's already been patched. 8.5p1 to 9.7p1, vulnerable. And 9.8p1 and later is not vulnerable. So there's a little bit of here. For me, I can just say, like, a long time ago, I got rid of OpenSSH. I don't use it. I understand it's really, I just didn't have a need for it. So thankfully, I'm not impacted by it. And I would suggest to anybody out there that runs a system that is running it, consider disabling it or just removing it altogether if you don't need it, because it's just one more attack vector. Either way. So the issue for this vulnerability is the handling of the signal interruptions and memory management. So when a client fails to authenticate within a stipulated time frame, OpenSSH usually sends a signal to itself, and the signal acts as a timer, and it indicates that the authentication process has exceeded the allotted time. So in this response to the signal, OpenSSH executes a signal handler to clean up the resources and terminate the connection. But there's the vulnerability that exploits a critical race condition between the signal handler and the underlying memory management routines. So by sending malicious packets, an attacker can manipulate a system state, and they could use the signal handler interrupts with the memory that's inconsistent or unpredictable state, and it could lead to memory corruption, potential overflow of buffer, and execution of arbitrary code. You know where this is going. It basically runs stuff from remotely, potentially getting root access the whole nine yards. So ultimately, what I suggest is patch your OpenSSH to one that is not vulnerable, or as I suggested, if you don't use it and your system is running it, simply just disable it or remove it altogether. That's the safest method. That's my opinion, but do what you may wish. But I don't think this impacts you whatsoever, Joey, because it's more on the Linux, Unix type stuff.
Yeah, SFTP is not something that I use regularly, if at all. Couple things of note here. Did you see who reported the vulnerability?
No.
Kaspersky.
Oh, yes. But they're now banned for providing services in...
Yeah.
They're not going to stop reporting on stuff. It's just, unfortunately, they're not going to be...
Is this nuts? It's just crazy. Like this is a company clearly, I mean, at least in my view, I'm kind of a layperson in this, you know, realm, but in my view, this is a significant exploit that probably affects a lot of systems. And it's something that's difficult to overcome if you don't know that it's there. Because as you mentioned, it's part of a remote sort of structuring. And so these guys really don't gain if they're a hostile state actor. They don't gain anything by making these reports public and sharing them with English speaking outlets, but they do it. They do it almost every week. We see something from these guys on this show, and it's frustrating to me that they're still being qualified or quantified, I should say, as these, hostile enemy forces. It drives me nuts. Other thing I want to note, is there what was the replacement for sort of SSH in normal computing environments? I don't know if I'm saying that right, but I get the feeling this is kind of maybe not older tech, but infrequently used tech now. So what replaced it?
I don't think anything replaced it. It's still being used. It's a way to log in remotely. Oh, so okay. Telnet or something was probably the original, and this is like a more secure version of that to log in and to get access to the terminal. So to be honest, this is the way that if I were to log into something, like I had a Raspberry Pi not too long ago, and that was the way I logged in through SSH.
Oh, cool.
And it was, because then I had direct access to everything and I could just do whatever I want. But I should boot up that Raspberry Pi again. It's been a long time since I used it. It was a fun project to use, but I'm going into the weeds here. I don't think anything replaced. This is something that is still being used, I would imagine, because just the functionality and what it provides the end user,
yeah,
you have access to everything as long as you have access to root.
Stay on top of this stuff, boys and girls. That's it for this week. Take care of yourselves. We'll see you next Thursday or Friday, depending on the weather and Len's golf schedule. But
I'm golfing 100% next week.
I don't long weekend. Seen. Long weekend next weekend, right?
Yeah, Monday is a holiday. Yeah.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, all right. We'll see you guys then. Until then, take care of yourselves.